The individual I asked to speak tonight, I met early in recovery. I think I had a year or two clean, and I went to a retreat in Ohio. I think it was the middle of winter, actually. I had just switched sponsors at the time, and you know, I kept hearing from my sponsor, you're gonna meet all these good people, and I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, I was still very new and very thrived on chaos. And we went to dinner, I think it was Saturday night, and there was a lot of people at the table with a lot of time, and I didn't say much that night, but I remember listening to this dude talk. I mean, we were at dinner for about probably 3 or 4 hours that night, and I remember the sense of peace that I saw in this individual. And at that time, my life was anything but peaceful, and I was like, wow, it blew me away. And we've kept in touch via like social media and stuff since then. And when we were talking about introducing a different type of program this year, focusing on steps, traditions, and the principles behind them, I knew he was one person I wanted to ask, because I think back to that night often, and just the conversation about NA and my blossoming love for this fellowship at that time, and he was a big part of feeding that. So, for step 12, tradition 12, responsibility, service, and true anonymity, I'll give you JM from Fireside Solutions Group of NA from Central Ohio. Area.
I'm Jan, I'm an addict.
Yeah.
I'll stand away from this thing.
Hey, can I have a hug?
Yes!
Oh.
And that is step 12. Thank you. Jay, and I'm still an addict. And deeply appreciate the opportunity to give a share. Anything that I'm going to say, it's not right, it's not wrong, it's just my personal experience, strength, and hope. In Narcotics Anonymous, my clean date is April 3rd, 1987. I know, I need my like geriatric walker at this point. And what I want to do is just for one moment to just share one breath. Because we know people who don't get to do that anymore. And I've lost a lot of friends. I appreciate, like I said, just having the opportunity to give a share and getting down to it. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you know, and carrying this message and practicing these principles in all of our affairs. For me, you know, my experience is that the spiritual awakening has been all along the way. You know, starting from, you know, what I always like to share about is my experience, strength, and hope with the steps, you know. We don't really have to qualify in Narcotics Anonymous. We have like actual readings about that. And, you know, when I, the first awakening, and the only time I really recognize, oh, that was an awakening, is always in hindsight. It's not like when I'm in the moment. But if my, my first spiritual awakening in NA was, in Salisbury, Maryland, showing up at this church that St. Albans Church, and I was standing out in the hallway, and I had done like all this like stuff, but I was afraid to walk into the room. And there was this guy, he's deceased now, his name was Wayne Williams, and Wayne came out, and he said, "Are you here for the NA meeting?" And I said, "Maybe." It's like this old guy. I'm like this, like, I'm 17, man. And maybe? And he said, "Well, I'll get you across." And he walked me into that room. And that kindness that Wayne extended to me, that was an awakening for me. Because, you know, I don't know if you have the same version of addiction that I do, but it's like all about isolation, procrastination, desolation, you know, death and deformity. Don't make friends very well. And Wayne also, you know, another awakening is, in step one, is that he gave me my first definition of love, because I didn't understand what love was. And Wayne said that love is taking delight in somebody else's well-being. And I was like, that's pretty cool. And in the path of my recovery, you know, letting my wall down just enough to ask someone to be my temporary sponsor, because I was anti-commitment. At that point, I was committed to getting half, but I don't know about this. You know, and his name's Ralph T, and Ralph is still around. And I knew him from playing in a band. By the way, did you hear Tool's coming out with a new album? Just saying. I'm old, but I like Tool. And so I'm happy this year. The one thing, the one bright spot. And Ralph said, okay. And I had a sense of trust because, you know, we played in a band together. I was like, dude, if you can get clean, I know for sure, like, I'm in. You know, and because I knew how he used. And that was the beginning of a different kind of relationship, you know. And, you know, for me today, you know, talking about these things, you know, in 90, you know, I always like to say, in 90 days clean, that was about as clean as I was ever going to get. And, but the odd thing was, is that I was clean. And I had like 8-9 months clean. And I was freaking out because essentially I was still suicidal. And I was depressed. And I was really scared. And somehow, mystically, I ended up somewhere, I think, are we near Harrisburg? There was like a highway and there were signs and something said Harrisburg, and I paid like 10 bucks for a toll. And but there's this thing that was, I think, going around here somewhere. It was called Marlikna, Mid-Atlantic Regional Learning Conference. I don't know how I got there. And but addicts will abduct you, which is kind of nice. That's kind of friendly. And I heard this guy who's still alive, his name's Mason D, and he said, "Addiction's a lie, lies dead, because we're the proof of that." And he said, "You know, my disease is one of lies and illusions, the things that my mind tells me that aren't true, but I think that are true, and I harm myself along the way." And like he talked about recovery in a way that just like something resonated, just something hit me in my heart. And I ran up to him and I said, "Will you be my sponsor?" And Mason said, "No." "But this is narcotics, you're supposed to say yes." He says, "That's your first lesson. We don't always say yes." And but he says, "If I sponsor this guy," and he wrote his name and number on a piece of paper and said, "Call him." And I didn't know that my soon-to-be sponsor was actually in that room. And he was my sponsor for the first 7 years of my recovery. And so, you know, chapter 5 for me is the first chapter, or the basic text, because it's the absolute blueprint for recovery. And how I know that for me personally, my experience is the very first sentence after the italicized part is, the very first thing you must do is stop using. Oh, hello. I was always looking for that mystical, you know, and directive. And that's the other thing, too. Maybe that was my spiritual awakening. Nobody was making suggestions back there. I was, like, being told what to do. And I was rebellious. And I said, you need to stop telling me what to do. And then there was this woman, and she's still clean. She's got a lot of clean time. Her name's Shireen. And Shireen said, let me explain something to you. Did you, like, when the drug dealer told you to do something, did you, like, take it as a suggestion or a direction? I said, a direction. She says, okay, well, you can shut the F up now. That has been resolved for you. She was also the one who told us that we weren't going to start a young person's meeting because we just F each other to death, so that we were just going to stick with the grown-ups. And I'm like, but I thought that this was a democratic fellowship. Here's your new spiritual awakening. Not for you. I'm like, okay. And so that was it, in learning what surrender meant, which was not fighting the help. And I love your shirt. I love your symbol for, you know, this retreat. You know, that it's an inside job, but with outside help. Because recovering Narcotics Anonymous is absolutely a team sport. You know, I have never, ever, ever succeeded on my own. I like, you know, in my home area, you know, Central Ohio, what we say there is, today we have, and we say what our clean time is. It's not that I have it, that we got it together. That's the only way this fellowship has ever worked for me. Dennis is here, and when my daughter was like 16 or 17, she got in a car crash related to using, and her boyfriend was driving the car, and the car flipped 6 times, door came off. The doctors at the hospital didn't understand why she wasn't dead. And it was relationships like with Dennis, Mick, my sponsor, my friend, people all over the United States, because I'm fortunate. I get to travel everywhere in the U.S. And nobody had my back. Everybody had my front, you know. And it was that hug, heart to heart, spirit to spirit. And for me, you know, today I say that, you know, if I have any awakening at this point about step one and that whole thing that I was talking about related to, you know, in 90 days, that's about as physically clean as we're ever going to get. But we all relate. It doesn't matter if you have less than zero time today or 35 years. The feelings are all the same. And that's the point of anonymity. And so for me today, what, you know, how I relate to my disease is because in chapter 5 it says you begin with step 1, then you go into step 2, step 3, so on and so forth. And eventually you'll come to an understanding of this program for yourself. And hopefully we can articulate that. And so for me, what I'm actually powerless over is self-rejecting thought. Because I don't know if you have, like I said, the same problem that I do, but the negativity of the mind, it's always got a story. Something always sucks. Somebody always can't do it right. You know, man, I can't believe that they're running that subcommittee like that. But if I was there, would you like to volunteer? Hell no. I feel like Eminem right now. Why can't they be special? You know, and but these self-rejecting thoughts and the awakening that I had with my sponsor was, essentially, do you really believe that you have control over your thought process, the self-centeredness, the self-obsession? And I said, of course I do. Duh. But the reality was, what happens at 3 o'clock in the morning and we're obsessing and compulsing about something and we tell our mind to shut up and it doesn't cooperate, that could probably tell us everything that we need to know. Because I can't stop that. And people say, and it actually says it in the basic text, the program does not work by magic. In my experience, strength and hope is that's not true. Magic for me is me and God in contact, conscious contact. It definitely works by magic. And just praying, dear God, please protect and provide for me. Guide and illuminate the path of my pilgrimage. Grant me courage, commitment, and strength. Teach me to care and give without reservation. Remind me of gratitude and principle. Please allow me to recognize your presence in me and around me, and allow my life to be a reflection of your love. That prayer was written by another Narcotics Anonymous member named Greg P., who is also deceased. Or the third step prayer. Take my will and my life. Guide me in my recovery. Show me how to live clean. Somehow just saying that like over and over and over again, like a mantra. Now, a mantra is just a word from India that means that which protects the mind from its own natural negativity. That somehow that cuts through my personal version of unsoundness of mind and heart. And, you know, step two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know, the way I relate to that today is, because like I said, you know, my sponsor gives me permission to recalibrate the steps to kind of personalize it at this point. And so, you know, what I always like to say now is, we came to believe that the power of love is greater than ourselves. And it's love that will restore us to sanity with lots of voluntary effort, because that's what love means to me. The spiritual principles. Not even understanding what the words meant. Like kindness, appreciation, friendliness. The awakening was, is that I could verbalize what these words were. I had an intellectual understanding, but I didn't have an emotional understanding of it. And that guy, Greg, he was sponsoring one of my friends, and Greg gave him these two pieces of paper, and they had like faces on them, like a feelings and stuff like that. And I'm like, you mean there's something other than sad, mad, or glad? And F you? And that awakening was is that I needed to get a vocabulary of feelings other than this addiction transactional stuff rather than transformational. Like I do for you, you do for me. It's all like cutthroat and all that stuff. The awakening through step three was talking to Mason at his house in Ellicott City, Maryland. And you know, grand sponsors are like kind of tricky and, you know, they're kind of shady. You're laughing because you know. And Mason says, "Gee, why is Red Sea dead?" I'm like, what does that have to possibly do with step three? And finally, I just said, I don't know. And he said, the reason why the Red Sea is dead is because it has no inlets and it has no outlets. It's completely cut off. And so anything that you put in there will die. And he said, that's us when we're isolated. We don't have inlets. We don't have outlets. And when he said that, my mind just like, I totally got it. And he said, and he went on to say, in his shadiness, the more inlets and outlets that you have, the more flow that you have, the more you talk, because this is the only disease that you can talk your way out of, the better off you'll be. So when you're sitting in a meeting and you're sitting on your hands, or nowadays, back when I got clean, they had like the Don Johnson bag phone, just saying. That one where you get like the $3,000 cell phone bill and you say, oh, well, at least I got through 1 month with this device. And I told you, I get a gold walker soon. I'm praying for that. And so I was going to have to learn how to communicate. And this goes to the 12th tradition, which is putting principles before personalities, mostly my own. And in being able to say and articulate, I need help. And that, you know, third step for me, you know, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of love as I understand it in this moment. That's as simple as I can get it. And that we do this together. You know, what's my commitment with lots of voluntary effort to showing up, showing out, and not just working these steps, but using the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous is my meditation practice, moment to moment to moment. And no matter what, not laying the program down, because when I was in active addiction, the truth was I never laid the drugs down. I was always with a plan. And also, I do have to say this for that special awakening for those people who say, if I can't have fun in recovery, I'm not staying clean. And my question is always, was it when the SWAT team showed up at your house, was that fun? When you were like robbing out of your mom's purse, was that fun? Because that's the stuff that I was doing. It was never fun. It was like having three full-time jobs to sustain that personal version of insanity, of unsoundness of heart and mind. The awakening, like step four, was simply about not doing a fearless moral inventory, but just doing a fearing less moral inventory. It was all about how I got separated from my values and what brought me back. And the thing that always separated me from my values, the things I actually cared about, was fear, shame, guilt, blame, isolation, that distorted sense of self that can't get out of the way of a distorted sense of self, which is why I need you, because you have a way of seeing me with perspective. And not understanding, like literally sitting there in front of a piece of paper and not knowing what to write, like, what are your values? What are you, like, what's doable, you know? And people kindly sat with me at Friendly's and Denny's and, you know, coffee shops, and they helped me discover what my values were. And here's the inner Jedi of recovery. For all those people who say, I don't know what I want. I don't know what I want. And I was that person. And then Ralph asked me this, like, really strange question. He says, what is it that you don't want? So I wrote down all the things that I didn't want. And he says, whatever's the opposite of that, that's what you want. Well, damn, that was easy. dog, I'm down. You know? And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I always say I was raised in Narcotics Anonymous. I did get here young. I did a lot of damage along the way. And but I was so fortunate that no one was contentious with me, that nobody was saying things like, well, you're too young to get it. They said we couldn't have, like, the young people's meeting. But in that step five, you know, admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature, not the details of the wrong. So do you believe that all addicts have the same exact nature of wrongs? Is what Bly asked me, who was my sponsor for that first 7 years. And I said, no. I haven't robbed any banks. I didn't shoot dope. I did a lot of this and that. And he promptly, you know, said these very spiritual words, which were, you're wrong. What do you mean I'm wrong? I got 18 months clean. How can you tell me I'm wrong? Yeah, you got 15 years, but still. Humility, it comes over time. Decades, but you'll still get there. And what he taught me in this awakening was is that the exact nature of our wrongs is that we all, in our own version of our way through this thing that we call character defects, is just a version of turning our back on love. And that, which oddly was what Greg said, addiction is the polar opposite of love. So obviously it's unlove. And so all my character defects, that's all that they were just from step four, they just pointed to. These are all the versions and all the ways that you manage to turn your back on love, and sometimes willfully. In step six, where it says we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, which is my favorite question, quite honestly, to ask people that I sponsor. Do you believe that all your defects of character can be removed? F no. I'm keeping it PG for the kids, so I'm being good tonight. I was with Keith earlier. I got all my good cuss words out. Just saying thank you, Keith. And he's spiritual. And why do it if you don't believe that they can all be removed? And, you know, I was one of those famous people who had the, like, 9 pages of defects of character. And then my sponsor said, this isn't about the defects. This is about what's your relationship status with your higher power. That step six is connected to step two. And this is just a deeper level of being restored to sanity. And so, how are you doing with your higher power? What is your higher power? And it actually says it in chapter 5, it says, you know, it's like in the second sentence, or actually it's the second paragraph where it says, working on the concept of a higher power is a project that we can undertake. It's a project. Because I don't know about you, but my spiritual awakening is, I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, I lived in Pittsburgh, and went to Catholic school there, got my ass beat by nuns, I must say, with the whip ball paddle. Corporal punishment was in. And we had a lot of sexually frustrated nuns, apparently, at St. Elm's Songs. And just saying, women can hit. You didn't need Mike Tyson. Get a good nun. They can fight. And you laugh because you know it's true. Thank you. You know, this whole thing, you know, that we were entirely ready to allow love to remove all these illusions that I have about my character. And that's what my sponsor and I agreed on. And that seems so much more doable, you know, for me. And there's this other thing that I always like to talk about, you know, related to step six, which is, it's about the hole in the soul. Which is, I don't know if you all still have it, but I can actually sit in meditation and actually watch the negative thoughts arise, not push them or pull them, and just allow them to die a natural death. Because honestly, the disease does not need my divine intervention. It just needs me not to go for the ride alone. So the odd thing was, and this was pretty intense, that it was so big when it happened. Because it didn't happen until I had 25 years in the program. You know, and you know, I've done a lot of rotations and versions of the step. I really, this is going to sound evil and like I'm throwing shade, but people say, I worked the step once and that's all I needed. Now I'm just doing the maintenance. I'm like, this ain't methadone. This is Narcotics Anonymous. We got big time take homes, live homes, just saying. And you won't have to talk to your probation officer about it. You could just do it. And and the reason why the hole in the soul for me couldn't be filled is because there wasn't a hole in the first place. The disease was just spinning me a story that I bought into, that there was a hole. And that I wasn't broken, that there was nothing wrong with me. I can do defective things, I can do unmanageable things, but that doesn't mean that I'm defective. There's a difference. It's like I say to my kids, I have two kids, I say, I love you every day, but I don't always like what you do. And my kids promptly say, and that's exactly how we feel about you too. I said, thank you, sir, very much. Elvis has left the building. And but that's a big deal, that we are not broken. And that's why we don't give up on each other. And that's the point of service. You know, people ask me, when do we give up on an addict? Because, man, they like got like 92,000 white key tags. Or they're not acting right. Or they don't seem to want it. I'm like, oh, really? They came to Narcotics Anonymous of their own volition. They just woke up and said, oh, I think that I'm just going to start doing this thing and it's all going to get real. If you go to Narcotics Anonymous, I have a feeling that we will all meet some people who have optional, oppositional defiant disorder with over-anxious features or some stuff. Like, I think a couple of, I've been diagnosed, how about you? I'm just saying. I guess where, you know, I want to be respectful of time, but there are two things that, you know, I'd like to share out for letting this share go. It's about service, anonymity, step 11, you know, praying for the power to carry out God's will. What is God's will? You know, like it's an episode of Jeopardy. What's God's will? I think God's will is dot, dot, dot. Anytime someone says, I think, I'm like, then that just means you don't know. Because in the sixth step, I believe it said that this is not a program of spiritual theory. It's a program of spiritual reality. And so for me, the power, what God's will is for me, is love. And I pray for the power and the strength to carry out love. And I was talking to somebody, I guess it was Keith or somebody, we were talking about Dayton, Ohio. God forbid. And my daughter was took her to the Midwest because that's where I hang out and do recovery, is Columbus and Cincinnati. And so where she was living, which was Eastern Shore, Maryland, like, I don't think it's going to happen for you there. And that was being honest. Because there was like a lot of dual messages and this and that. And I'm like, and it, you know, we're not a fellowship of cliques and gangs. And that's how it got. And meeting attendance went from like 90. Like one of my friends showed me this thing where it went from 90. There was like to 17 people consistently in meetings. Because we weren't taking care of business. And they wanted me to like half black Jesus to show up and like, can you bring some divine intervention? I'm like, sorry, I'm just an addict. I'll sit in the meetings, I'll be in the meetings because I need to be there for myself too. But I the deepest water I ever walk on is a mud puddle. That's about it. So Dayton, there's like the Salvation Army and there's this other thing there. It's like it's a homeless shelter. And she was sitting in my car and like I drove to the Midwest, you know, down to Dayton. And I was hanging out there. My CEO is super cool. And, you know, I hadn't been in the office in about 3 weeks. And he's like, you're working anyway. You know, you got a computer and all that stuff. And you're like, I don't give a crap. And, but my daughter was sitting in the car, and she's like, so you, and I took her to get some food and stuff like that, and she says, so you want me to get out and go back into the homeless shelter? And I said, yeah. Because I flew out there from Seattle, and she says, so you're not going to put me up somewhere? And I said, no. Why not? Because you're an addict in active addiction, and I can't trust you. But I do trust the nature of the disease, and you will destroy yourself and everybody in your path. Well, you're an asshole. And I say, and you could be right about that. She's got 6 months clean. Yes. The spiritual awakening is, what does it look like to be a parent to one of your kids who's an addict and they never grew up in a household where active addiction was a thing? My mom used to jump on my butt because she's like, you need to beat her up. I'm like, you and dad did it. How did it work out for you with me? So maybe I won't, like, you know, beat my kids, sorry. And one of the things that led to her, and this is about service, getting clean, is that she was in a trap house. Back in the old days, they used to call it a dope house, by the way. I was in Seattle, and she called me. My kid never calls me when she's using. She was outside in this place called Milford, Ohio. She just had pants and a shirt on, and it was like that Midwest post-apocalyptic cold, like negative 19. And I was in Seattle and couldn't obviously get to her. So I called one of my friends, Mike. And Mike was down in Cincinnati, went up to Milford and said, dude, your kid is cold and I'm taking her to a hospital. She almost got, because she's a diabetic, she almost got her arm cut off. All this other stuff was going on. And I had this other friend in Cincinnati and my sponsor in Columbus. And I said, I just need you to pray with me. because I've lost all hope. Like what my ex-wife and I have been saving up for was honestly her funeral. And that's a true story. That is not hyperbole. All these jigsaw puzzle pieces coming together. Recovery is a team sport. That's the awakening for me. I can tell you, you know, people have these war stories and all these things and what it was like and active and whatever. If you stay here long enough, you'll get a story. It's a recovery story. Grace, the free, unmerited love and favor, not just of my higher power, which is loving, kind, care, presence, that's my higher power is love. But of friends like Dennis, my sponsor, friends, people that I get to sponsor, you. That's what this is all about. It's all about connection. In 2015, and this is the last thing I'll share. My brother, Ray, died December 27th, which was the exact same day that our dad died 20 years before. My mom died June 17th. And then my sister died at the end of the year. And there was this emotional upheaval. You know, I was there for my mom's last breath. You know, and talk about amends, you know, and being there with her, for her, because of the cancer. But there was this thing that was going on in my head that was like, because after my mom died, it was like, the only thing I could say is I ran out of fuel. And I couldn't do one more thing. And my sister June died. And my sponsor, I was sitting, you know, we were sitting in this bonton noodles thing in Columbus, you know, and she said, love is not fuel. It's just there. You can't run out of it. You're not going to run out of air. You're not going to run out of love. And that was probably, you know, her death was probably, in June, was the biggest awakening of my life. That love has the capacity to penetrate the barrier of death. And the grief is not something that I get through. Grief is saying, I miss your presence in my life. And all of the addicts that I've known, alive and dead, the ones that have OD'd, Jesse, Nick, Greg, Vince, Katie, just this year, I miss their presence in my life. I miss their whining. I miss their complaining. I miss their, I'm not sure. Will you buy me a McDonald's cheeseburger? I'm a vegetarian. You think I'm giving you that? Yes, I will. We're not broken. We just do broken things. Jimmy Kinnon, our founder, you know, I invite you to read Another Look. But this whole principle, this whole meditation practice on goodwill and proper service and doing the right things for the right reasons. The right reason that we do anything in Narcotics Anonymous is love. That's it. It doesn't get bigger than that. It doesn't get smaller than that. And when we start being contentious with each other and complaining about each other and gossiping about each other and harming each other and all that stuff, that's just the disease. And if I have a complaint about you, I need to turn that around and understand that that's the disease that rides along with me, with its negativity. We all do broken things, but we're not broken. I love you every day. Thank you.